You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where when there's no room in hell, I will podcast alone. I'm your host, Justin M. Wisniewski, and if you enjoy this episode, then we should be best friends. Why is that? Because joining me this trip is no one. Daniel is on paternity leave. William is on paternity leave. Actually, none of that is correct. Daniel, I don't know. I forget. You're going to have to ask him at him. Out on the social medias where he is. I forget. He wasn't going to be able to record, though. William probably would have been able to record, but I am going to Seattle. It is my girlfriend's birthday the day I am recording this, and she's wanted to go to Seattle for a while, so we're taking a few-day trip to Seattle because I can't imagine. Sorry, Midsider Alfred. Sorry. I'm sure meeting you will be very nice, but I can't imagine being in Seattle for more than a couple days. I mean, what is there to do there when it's not football season and the Seahawks aren't playing? I mean, they took away your basketball team. What, the Mariners? Has anyone cared about the Mariners since Ken Griffey Jr.? I've been to Seattle once, 2007, when the Patriots were playing the Seahawks. Dion Branch went off that game. I think we won. It's generally a pretty good assumption that we won a game, if I don't remember it, because I remember the losses because there's so few of them. Now I just sound arrogant. And Seattle, there's not much in Seattle. I mean, I think we're doing everything in Seattle in one day and Friday. And then we're going to the Funko headquarters on Saturday morning. And, you know, Seattle's cold. It's overcast. It's California has had this winter weather recently. When I say winter, it was basically fall in New England and California for a few months. And now it's finally going to be 80 degrees again. And of course, I'm going to a place where it's colder. Because of that, Daniel couldn't record. I couldn't record unless you wanted me to record an episode on a plane. That would be really interesting. I mean, there's Wi-Fi on a plane nowadays, right? So theoretically, I could get on Discord and record on a plane. But then everybody else would be chiming in. You'd hear all the background noise. You'd hear the pilot come on. And I wonder, is the Wi-Fi interrupted? Because I know they pause a video, even if you're on their app. But they don't pause if you're on your own app. So no, the Wi-Fi wouldn't be interrupted. But you would hear the pilot. So you don't really want that. Instead, you just get me rambling and rambling and rambling. Thankfully, I do have a few topics I want to talk about. I foreshadowed one on the last episode, at the end of the last episode. And that is the controversy about my hardline stance on people who back up into parking spots. Now, I've had many conversations since this episode, and I'm not lying. This is the topic we've had the most feedback ever on the podcast. The highest number of comments about. You know, we'll get one or two about different episodes. You know, people tend to talk to me randomly about Zack Snyder stuff, about trailers. You know, we'll have different people submit trailers. But the highest volume and most passionate was this issue. I don't know why. I think I know why, and we'll get to that. But I have heard all of your arguments for why backing up, and this is the thing, most of the comments were why backing up is superior. I don't know what it is out of the woodworks. You people fucking come out of the woodworks and you're like, oh yeah, this is why backing up out of a park, backing up into a parking spot is better. So I've heard all your arguments and I've come to a few conclusions. And I've come to these conclusions from testing. I did test one night at the tutoring center I work at because it's dark. It gets dark. I backed into a parking spot. And the reason I say that is I have decided just generally, here's a general rule I've decided for myself. I am not going to back up into parking spots because I've got my two magnets back there. I've got my Clemson 2018 national champions magnet, and I've got my Patriots 6 times champions magnet. And people can't see those as much, as often, They get less FaceTime if I back into a parking spot. But if the back of my car is facing the aisle, anyone who walks by or drives by has to see those. This gives people more FaceTime with greatness, with me gloating a little bit. And, you know, this is because usually the only time I can gloat with my car is on the highway or on the roads. Because what I do is like, so the other day, this pickup truck had a Detroit Lions sticker and had a Philadelphia Eagles sticker. In the middle, it had Super Bowl 52 champions in between the two. And I was like, what the fuck is going on? Like, if you're a Lions fan, do you just get to have a second team now? Like, Browns fans for the past however many years, like, did they get to have a second team? And why would you want one? I mean, doesn't that undermine? Like, the Browns now, everyone, like, they're everyone's Super Bowl favorites because they got Odell Beckham. Having a second team, like, doesn't that undermine the journey you go through so that when your team actually becomes good, like the Browns are starting to rise up a little bit now, wouldn't that undermine your commitment? It's like, say you're dating a poor person and then you're also dating somebody else to feel better about the fact that you're dating a poor person. So you date like an average income person because it's like, oh, I don't want to be with a completely poor person. But then the poor person gets rich. Don't you feel like kind of a dick? You're like, maybe I should have stuck by that guy. Isn't it the same thing if you're like a Lions or a Browns fan? Anyway, this person cut me off in the pickup truck, and only because it was an Eagles fan, I made a point, because this is, you know, stop and go traffic in the morning in California. I made a point of getting in front of them to show them, and I'm not saying the gender for a reason, which now you just figured out what the gender is, but to show them my fucking six times magnet, because that's what Eagles fans were, right? They beat us in one Super Bowl and they're like, we're the best ever. Oh yeah, who came back out on top again this year, and what happened to you guys? But then as I'm passing the fucking car, as I'm passing the pickup truck, it's a goddamn woman driving the car. Only a woman would think it's acceptable to have two teams. Or even worse, she probably knows nothing about football and like her boyfriend's from Philadelphia or some shit. Or she's from Philadelphia and she decided to date a Lions fan. I don't know, whatever it is, it's your fucking car, only put your team on it. That's besides the point. That's the only time, though, that I get to show people my magnets and show off a little bit. That's the only time I'm really a dick being a fan, because I know it makes people mad in traffic, and I only do that in traffic because people in California are so bad. So generally, I'm going to still go front first into parking spots just so people can see those magnets. But I tried to back up because I knew it would be dark when I got out of tutoring. So it didn't matter if you could see my magnets. So I backed in and I tried, and I still reached these conclusions. The first major argument I heard was safety for children, because you can't really see them over the back of your car. I accept that. Okay. If you're such an empathetic and such an understanding person, or you have children and you really worry about that, fine. I can understand that. I'm not going to argue with that. Longer vehicles or bigger vehicles like pickup trucks, I totally get it backing in. It's so much easier to see pulling out. And when you pull out face forward in a longer vehicle, it is a lot safer because you're backing in where it's only vehicles you could hit. Whereas when you're backing out the other way, you could potentially hit people. Totally agree. That's fine. If you're in a pickup truck, I get it 100%. But also remember contextually, I am in California. So why the fuck do you have a pickup truck to begin with in Southern California? What, you get a pickup truck in Southern California so you can go to Home Depot and load five Mexicans into the back? That's why you get a pickup truck? Because you're not fucking moving shit yourself. Another issue. Overall safety. People just think it's safer because of the view for everyone. I'm going to disagree with this completely. This one and the last one, they go together, where you're just deferring when the danger is. Because when I backed into that parking spot, I got in the car afterwards. At the end of the day, I got out of tutoring, I get out of the car and I go in the car, and I turn on the car, I look both ways, and I start hitting the gas. And because I'm pulling out face first, and I can see, and I have a clear line of vision, I felt a lot safer. And as I'm pulling out quickly, some guy comes around the building from my right-hand side and nearly fucking clips me. He was driving too fast, through the parking lot. And that is the issue. I agree completely. It's a lot easier to see when you're back, when you're backing in and pulling straight out. I agree completely. No matter the size of your car, it's a lot easier to see. But the safety issue still remains. Either way, you're either being dangerous when you're backing in the first time or backing out the second time. The danger remains either way because the danger is not you. It's the same principle as driving in general. The number one danger is other people on the road. And that's what I learned. Of course, the one fucking time, this is what people who know me call Justin Luck. The one fucking time I back in, somebody nearly fucking clips me when I'm pulling out. So that you're just deferring it. You're deferring when the danger is. Is it when you park or when you pull out? That's it. You're deferring. And it's the same thing with the time. That was a lot of the response I have. I know Midsider Mark. Midsider Mark has been with us since season 7. Since season 1. This is season 7. I hope I don't upset him so much that he leaves because of what I'm about to say. But he was one of the people who made the argument. I'm giving a gift to myself because I'm saving time for my future self by backing in. Yeah, but what about the time you took away from your present self? This is, again, it's deferred. You're either deferring the danger or you're deferring the time saved. This seems like a contextual decision to me. When do you need the most time? Or when is it best for you psychologically? Now, I'm not going to argue with you about what's best for you psychologically. Only you can know the answer to that question. But I think a lot of this, my ultimate conclusion, besides those four conclusions, right? The safety for children, fine. Ease of backing in for bigger, longer vehicles, fine. The safety overall, that's a push. You're deferring it when it's more dangerous or not. And time, that's a push. But I think people are responding so strongly to this, and they have such a strong opinion. And I've heard from Midsider Michael, who basically all of my thoughts, by the way. If you want to know what I text Midsider Michael about, it's all of these things. I just copied and pasted quotes from the I had sent him from our text messages and put them into an outline, and that's how I'm doing this episode. So this is basically a solo episode from me is a text message thread with Midsider Michael, if you were curious. But he told me he Googled it because he heard how much of the backlash we were having and he heard the topic. And a lot of people have very strong opinions on this. And the reason I think there's such strong opinions, and I think this is why people in California are doing it. This probably echoes the episode. I don't remember because of podcast amnesia. But I think there's an elitism here. I think people think they're clever. Oh, I'm smarter than the average bear. Therefore, hey, let's go back up into a parking spot. That's probably a really bad Yogi impersonation, but I think they think they're smarter than the average bear, and that's why they're so passionate about it. And I'm sorry, Midsider Mark, if that upsets you. I'm not trying to upset you. You've got a really cool license plate where it says Reed Ein. I'm pretty sure if I tried to have that as a license plate in California, they would either kick me out of the state or tell me it's not allowed. But that's what I think it is, and that's why I think people are so passionate about it. Here's the thing. If you want to do it, do it. That's fine. I have no problem with that. It's just that the frequency of it and the such strong fervor about why it's better doesn't make sense to me. And I read that as this sort of elitism. And maybe that's just me. Maybe I'm just reading shit that way. Maybe that's my fucking Bostonian, the man is out to get me, everyone's out to get me culture that I grew up in. And maybe you all are just trying to tell me very nicely why you do it, which is great. But I think ultimately I would appreciate it better. When I say appreciate, I mean understand it better. Appreciate your argument and your perspective more. I don't mean like, hey, like good argument. I really appreciate that argument. I mean appreciate and understand. If you just said, I enjoy it more, and these are the reasons I enjoy it more. And maybe that's a sub premise, a suppressed premise. And maybe that's the issue I'm missing, but I don't know, maybe, like I said again, maybe it's just my Massachusetts. But that's my conclusion on the backing up driving thing. I'm sure I'm about to get 18 more fucking messages. I'll get like 3 Discord messages, a bunch of tweets. Can't you people just come at me about the Zack Snyder event and be like, hey, are you going to watch Zack Snyder? Yes, I am going to go watch Zack Snyder in Pasadena. He's going to show Show? Yeah, I was going to say air, but he's not going to air. He's going to show it. In the school he went to, he's going to show the Dawn of the Dead director's cut. Wow, I'm fucking, my mind is blanking right now on a Zack Snyder movie. The Watchmen director's cut and the Batman versus Superman director's cut. And then he's going to hold panels after all three of those. In fact, no, you're going to hear this episode before, yeah. It'll be a couple weeks, though, because... No, I can talk about a couple of them. So, not this episode, but the next one, I'll be able to talk about the Dawn of the Dead on Friday night and the Watchmen panel on Saturday night. Yeah, so he's going to have panels with people from the movies talking about those movies. I know Larry Fong, his DP, his director of photography, has confirmed via Twitter that he'll be there. So I'm expecting, especially because it's so close to Los Angeles, I'm expecting a lot of people to show up, perhaps some big names. So why don't you people ask me about that, huh? Why is it always like backing up into parking spots? Why don't you ever ask me about anything interesting about that? Like, oh, are you going to that? I'd be really looking forward to what you have to say about it. Huh? Talk to me about that. I'm lying, though. People do talk to me about stuff. For instance, something I've been hearing about all week and people keep asking me opinions on is this college admissions scandal. I don't know if you heard about it, if you've seen the news. I'm sure you've seen the news because we just fucking anything about celebrities in this culture. We just need to publicize it. Yeah, I don't even know if there were no celebrities involved in this. I don't even know if anyone cares. It's like the fucking Robert Kraft sting down in Florida, right? The prostitution sting, the supposed sex trafficking where no sex trafficking charges have been filed. They only included Kraft to get publicity. And it's the same thing here. I really believe that, or I wonder, I don't know if I believe, I wonder if people would care about this if there were no celebrities involved. Because that's the thing. What basically happened was a nonprofit was set up in Newport Beach, Orange County, California. Shocking that Californians would do this. Shocking. Completely shocking. They set up a nonprofit, and through it, parents funneled money to basically bribe admission officers, falsify transcripts and records saying their kids were things like athletes when they never were on certain teams, and also bribed ACT proctors, SAT proctors to either take the exam for their kids or to falsify the results, so change the answers on the test to give their kids higher scores. This is basically to get them into better schools because it's so quote-unquote competitive. I don't know the schools. I don't care what schools. I'm sure a number of them were California. Don't get me started on California higher education. People think out here that their schools are so great because there's so many people applying that they have such a high rejection rate. So people are like, it must be exclusive, right? It's the whole California like club mentality. If there's a bunch of people getting turned away from a club, it must be a good club, right? It must be a good bar if a bunch of people are getting turned away about it. People have the same mentality about colleges out here too. When the quality of education isn't as good. I always tell kids out here that I tutor when I'm tutoring them SAT, ACT. I ask them where they want to go and I tell them, go to the East Coast. And I show them the number of people that apply and the number that get accepted. And they're like, wow, that acceptance rate is high. Well, it's high compared to California because there's a lot fewer people applying. You have a better chance of getting into a school on the East Coast if you're a good student and you'll get a better education. So these parents, they did all these things to get their kids into these schools when they didn't deserve to get in these schools. Or who knows? I don't even know if they deserved or not. We don't even know what these kids' actual records are. And this is a big controversy because celebrities were involved. The two main I can think of are Lori Loughlin from Full House and Felicity Huffman, who I believe was on Desperate Housewives, two actresses. And people are upset because it's like, oh, you know, rich people are taking away the opportunities from people who actually deserve it. Can you believe that anyone would actually do this? Oh my God, this is such a shock. And my initial response is just, really? That's what you're surprised about? Since the beginning of the history of the world, since whenever humanity came out, right? Maybe you're a super creationist and you think 5,000 years ago humans came about, whatever you believe, since the beginning of human society, humans have been using their wealth, however wealth was defined at the time. Maybe it's whoever has the most deer skins. That's not what I wanted to say. I want to say buffalo skins. Buffalo skins, which, by the way, that would still be Tom Brady. See what I did there? How long did it take me to reference that? Okay. So, yeah. Since the beginning of time, rich people, wealthy people, have been using that wealth and power to get their children and themselves things they don't deserve. This is not a surprise. In fact, I believe this will always be happening. I'm not one of these people who believes in like this grand utopia where we can get rid of immoral, evil, unethical behavior in people. This will always be happening. Always, always. That has some interesting implications. I'll get to that in a second. But first, I want to say the thing that was most surprising to me about this. Everyone's shocked that this is happening. This is not a shock. This is expected, right? If this wasn't going on, I would be shocked. I would, you know, it's like, oh man, they did a prostitution sting and found that no money was exchanged, and all these women are consensually just slutting it up. Like that's unexpected. The fact that this happened is expected. But what happened was I was sent a list of the people and how much money they paid. And it was like, you know, $50,000 to bribe an ACT tutor, $30,000 to bribe an SAT tutor. And then I look at Felicity Huffman. She paid $15,000 to bribe an SAT, not tutor, proctor. Sorry, I've never been bribed. I want to be clear. Proctors. Felicity Huffman, $15,000. To bribe an ACT or SAT proctor to falsify the records for her kid. That's half of the low side of what everyone else paid, the $30,000. Somebody else paid $50,000. The real story here is why everybody was not using Felicity Huffman as a shrewd negotiator. Well done to you, Felicity Huffman. Not only did you cheat the system, but you cheated the people helping you cheat the system. If you're going to do it, that's the way you're going to do it. This is where all you anti-Semitic people can insert your Jewish comments, because her last name is Huffman. I don't know if she's actually Jewish, but I'm sure somebody out there is like, well, yeah, it's because she's a cheap Jew. I mean, maybe, but you know what? This is why I don't get why people get mad at the Jews, right? Why do you get mad at Jewish people? Maybe you should learn from them. All you fuckers out there, you dumb fucking white people like Lori Loughlin, like you paid double what Felicity Huffman paid. Maybe you should listen to her. So that was the thing that was shocking to me, where I was like, how the fuck, like all these other people are funneling all this money and she pays half of what everyone else pays. Well done to you, Felicity Huffman. But let's talk about some of the implications here. There's two implications that jumped out to me as far as what people can say about this and like what the sort of cultural and psychological and personal ramifications are. The first is this can be easily misconstrued into a critique of capitalism. And that's where it swings back to my comments about, oh, well, this will always be going on. You will always have unethical, immoral, evil people doing unethical, immoral, and evil things. You're never going to stop that. There will always be that kind of behavior. I don't live in this land where we can get rid of all psychological damage. I don't live in this utopian world. That's part of the reason objectivism appeals to me, and I understand it, because I don't think it's a utopian philosophy where you look at something like communism and Marxism, that only works on paper. But if you look at the reality of human beings, objectivism works, and this is a perfect example of it. And this is one of the greatest arguments for capitalism, right? People always say the largest capitalism is great because if you look at the number of people that have the best quality of life, it's through capitalism. Yes, there is a divide, right? We have the top 1%. That's one of the biggest critiques, right? We have the top 1% who have more than everyone else. But why are you looking at it comparatively? And this is where objectivism comes in. Objectivism is about your own life. Stop fucking comparing yourself to everyone else. And it's the same thing here. You know, we have the 1% and we say, well, they're super wealthy, but look how, you know, the poor have iPhones, they have color TVs, they have refrigerators. Whereas if you look at like a feudal system, a monarchy, the royalty had all of that. I mean, would you rather be living in Game of Thrones? When you're talking about corrupt people, let's use the Lannisters as our metaphor. There will always be the Lannisters, right? We will always have them. Although the Lannister does always pay his debts. It may be cutting your head off, but he pays his debts, right? The Lannisters. Where do they do the highest amount of damage, and where are there more of them? Well, it's in a feudal medieval monarch, I don't know the adjective for that, monarchy, in that kind of society. In any of these corrupt collectivist societies or corrupt societies that are more oligarchical, right? Those are the societies where the corruptness has the most damage, and there's the most opportunity for them to be corrupt. Whereas in this system, the system that we have, and you know, the ideal system, I don't want to make it seem like the system we have is the ideal system, there is the least opportunity and the fewest amount of people comparatively across systems. That's what I'm talking about here. Comparatively across systems. And we can't say that the mere existence of evil, which will always be there, is reason enough to get rid of the entire system. We have to ask ourselves, is this the norm or is this the outlier? And to me, this is more of the outlier than the norm. And then here's the important thing where objectivism also comes in, right? So we have all that context there where these people will always exist. And yeah, they did a fucked up thing, but that's because they're fucked up people. And that's the second part that objectivism comes in, right? These people are doing this not out of any noble reason. They're not doing this out of any value. They're doing this for completely second-handed reasons. They're trying to cheat not the system. They're not trying to cheat other people. They're trying to cheat reality. If your kid, if you do not earn college, what value do you get by going to college? To say you went to college? To say you go to Stanford or USC or Harvard or Yale or whatever schools they picked, Georgetown, whatever schools they picked, you get to say? Well, you're not really going there. You're not really getting the growth of character, the growth of integrity. That is what the value of everything is. It's the whole money speech in Atlas Shrugged, right? The whole idea that money is only a tool. People with this mentality of a Lori Loughlin and a Felicity Huffman and all these other people who engaged in this have this mentality that it's the money that makes the person, not the person that makes the money. You know, it's the college that makes the person, not the person that makes the college. Let's use a very simple metaphor here. Clemson football. Who made Clemson football? Was it Dabo Sweeney, Deshaun Watson, and Trevor Lawrence? Or did Clemson football make Dabo Sweeney, Trevor Lawrence, and Deshaun Watson? Now, there's something to be said about a cycle here that, you know, once Deshaun made Clemson a certain play way, it gave Trevor Lawrence the opportunity. And I acknowledge that argument. But Trevor took it to another level. He made it the 15-0. He made it a dynasty equal to Alabama. Ooh, hot take, controversial comment. Deshaun Watson brought it to a certain level, and Dabo has the one who changed it away from how terribly Tommy Bowden was running it. And it's the same thing. When you go there, the things you do is what gives the school its credibility, what gives the school its honor, what gives the school that high-quality reputation. You are. Going there doesn't mean anything. You can go to a school and then go murder someone. I mean, look at all the great people who've done terrible things, right? I mean, just let's use O.J. Simpson, right? Look at all the great things he did in college and pro football. Does it matter? No, it didn't make him a good person. And that's what's going on here. These are bad parents because they're cheating their kids. They're cheating their kids out of the knowledge of delayed gratification, out of the idea that if you put in the work, you will enjoy things more, not only because you earned it, and you have the satisfaction of knowing you earned it, but you're a better person who knows how to appreciate achievement and greatness more. And they're taking that away from their kids. Why? So they can teach, so they can give them the illusion of self-esteem, of value, and the illusion of worth in other people's eyes. All they're doing is cheating reality. That's all this is. And as I said, these type of people will always exist, so I don't really care. And I also don't really care because Lori Loughlin. What? Tell me what she's done besides be Uncle Jesse's wife, Rebecca, on Full House. Tell me what she's done. You can't. Whoop-de-doo. And so a late 80s, early 90s, whenever the show aired, sitcom star. Maybe she's on the Netflix revival, probably, because that's all women. It's like Full House, except no men, right? Full House of Vaginas. Maybe she's on that. I don't know. But she hasn't done anything. So why do we care? Why do we care that these two-bit celebrities that have no effect on us? Why do we care in general? But that's a whole different topic. Why we care about when celebrities do things that have nothing to do with us, right? But anyway, last topic I want to talk about is this article that I found on Twitter that was published on March 12th. It's about online dating and dating in general, and it had some really interesting claims. And again, I think it misses the boat a little bit here because it doesn't take into account the growth of character. I see it as everything being, it's a purely materialistic thing. And we see this often in our society where we have things that are very deterministic, biologically deterministic. And I think it approaches dating in that way. But it does have some interesting things that are also generally true, because part of what we have to deal with as human beings is how do we battle our natures, or how do we, not battle, balance, because battle makes it sound combative. I got all Jordan Peterson there for a second, right? Oh, life is suffering and negative and you have to learn how to battle yourself and battle the world and blah, blah, blah. No, balance. How do you balance your nature, right? Balance your basic psychology with the things you choose. And how do you, over time, integrate those two together so you can have the life that you want? There are immutable facts about you. There are immutable facts about reality, immutable facts about you as a human being. And you have to balance that with your choices. And I think dating and relationships are fascinating because they're one of those topics where you most do that. You most have to find that balance. And if you don't have that balance in even a little way, things can be so out of whack and so explosive. And I say that personally, from personal experience, believe me. And I think this article is fascinating because it exists in that the discussion here exists in that in the middle of that balance, right? Somebody come up with the word, some scientist out there. In the middle of a seesaw, what's that called? I can't remember. But it exists right there. And I think, unfortunately, the article goes more toward the material, deterministic, materialistic side. But a few quotes. So the first quote is, another article about an experiment with Tinder claimed that the bottom 80% of men in terms of attractiveness are competing for the bottom 22% of women. The bottom 80% of men in terms of attractiveness are competing for the bottom 22% of men. And then, of course, the cognate is, of women, sorry. And the cognate is the top 78% of women are competing for the top 20% of men. Let me say that again so I can say it correctly. The bottom 80% of men, in terms of attractiveness, are competing for the bottom 22% of women. The top 78% of women are competing for the top 20% of men. Now, this is where the materialism comes in, right? Tinder is devoid of social context, so you can't look at someone and see how they're acting and read the social cues and read, you know, the subconscious things that we pick up very quickly. And you also only see them physically. So it's all pure on looks. But what this reveals is that we hear that men are more shallow, but it's actually women who are more shallow. Women, and this article seems, you know, it talks about this evolution and evolutionary biology. Based upon their biology, are more valuable in the reproductive process so they can be more selective of mates. And also men are programmed to be less discriminating because their goal from an evolutionary standpoint or biological standpoint is to impregnate as many women as possible. So we see this vetted out in the statistics. And that's what this next quote says. It seems hard to avoid a basic conclusion that the majority of women find the majority of men unattractive and not worth engaging with romantically, while the reverse is not true. That's a very succinct way to say what I was just saying. And this, I think, is vetting out in our society. And I think it's why we have things like the incel movement coming up, accepting that, trying to accept that truth and accept that you have to always strive to be as close as you can to that top 20% of men, because that's going to give you the highest chance to get a high quality partner, a high quality marriage, if that's what you want. And of course, this being a biologically, materialistically deterministic based article, this whole article goes into how humans actually aren't monogamous. They're polygyny, I think they called it. They're actually a species that's based on polygyny, and we go against that. And it, what's interesting is, I'm going to read a long two-paragraph excerpt here about how our culture and our society has developed to go away from the polygyny, because what that would do is create basically a society of 80% of men being unhappy and unfulfilled because they'd never have romantic, you know, they wouldn't have their romantic needs filled. They wouldn't have their physical sexual needs filled. So we had to do something as a species to go away from that. So these are the two paragraphs. The institution of monogamy is itself a redistributive type of policy. Okay, I'm going to stop. So as you know, I'm going to disagree with a lot of this. Some of it is good. I've already pointed out a lot of the goodness. I'm going to disagree with some of this. So now we're talking about like sexuality as if it's a commodity. This is where we get too much. Like, this is why people get mad at the incels, right? Oh, sexuality is a commodity and women owe it to give it to me. Like, it's like you can fucking trade it like it's a Nintendo game, right? Like, you have the original Battletoads and I have the original Double Dragons. You better fucking trade that with me, right? We're Disneyland. We're in Disney. We're pin trading. The fucking sex is pin trading at Disneyland. Like, capping the income of billionaires, it caps the total allowed romantic partners of the most attractive. So see how they're making a subversive argument for socialism here? We already cap the sexual market. Why don't we cap the actual economic market? It caps the total allowed romantic partners of the most attractive so that unattractive people have much better chances to find a partner. The marriages that we read about in historical accounts that are based on prudence and family arrangement make more sense when we realize that basing marriage on mutual attraction leads so many, both men and women, to be unsatisfied with the outcome, since most women find most men unattractive. So what are we, utilitarian? We're arguing this from a utilitarian standpoint. So the basing marriage on mutual attraction leads so many, both men and women, to be unsatisfied. So because so many are unsatisfied, it's immoral. It doesn't even make sense as an argument, unless you're a utilitarian. All the world's great religious traditions have extolled chastity as a great virtue and taught that there are higher goals than sexual satisfaction. These teachings add meaning to the otherwise poor lives of the majority of people who are regarded as perpetually unattractive. That makes sense. That makes sense. If you have a less evolved and less understanding culture, then you would want to teach people that their suffering is a virtue, right? This is why, you know, people critique, as I was making fun of earlier, Jordan Peterson for buying into the old religious myth that life is suffering. That's why life is suffering came about in religion, because you had these societies that made it so the majority of people were suffering and the minority were successful and had wealth and comfort. So you had to convince people that their life was great and they would be rewarded for their greatness of suffering later on, right? The whole delayed gratification thing. You see how this is all starting to weave together? It always all weaves together. It's always all integrated. And it makes sense from a sexual standpoint. I get that. But at the same time, when you're saying both men and women to be unsatisfied since most women find most men unattractive, or basing marriage on mutual attraction. That was the quote I was looking for. How are we defining attraction? That's the point I'm going to get to here. They are defining attraction as purely physical and purely materialistic. Even in centuries-old fairy tales like The Frog Prince and Beauty and the Beast, we see our culture's attempt to come to terms with the paradigm of a woman regarded as attractive pairing with a man who she regards as unattractive. The differing Gini coefficients, that was some scientific principle they used to explain why women have a greater market opportunity than men, so why they're pickier. It's due to the Gini coefficient. I don't think that means Ginny Weasley as in Harry Potter, you fucking nerds. Faced by men and women, guarantee that this will be a common, or even the most common, romantic pairing in a monogamous culture. So the most common, I want you to think about that out there, everyone. Think about that. Hear that for a second. The most common pairing is a woman regarded as attractive pairing with a man who she regards as unattractive. Hey, man, how do you fucking feel right now, huh? How do you feel? That means most of you are with somebody who thinks you're unattractive. Does that make you feel good about your relationship? This worldview? Does that make you feel good? Does that make you want to stay with your wife? Or does that make you want to fucking yell at her and leave? Because I know me, when I read that, I go, fuck, why am I in a relationship? Why am I even going to fucking try? I'm just going to go on myself. And now you understand where men going their own way come from. Right? If this is the fucking messaging you're giving men constantly, how are they going to fucking feel? Are they going to feel like they're in the 20%? What are the statistical odds? Well, you know the odds. The statistical odds are there's an 80% chance you're not in a relationship where the woman finds you attractive. How is that good for the self-esteem? What, so now you're just going to become Catholic and pray and be like, oh, dear God, I'm going to suffer through this woman not liking me? No, I get it. Like, you're in a relationship because you like the other person and, you know, you want them to like you and they should like you. And I get it. The focus should be, do you like them? I agree completely. But a baseline, people are like, well, what's attractive to you in a person? A baseline is that they like me, right? You have to like me for me to like you. I can say, oh, that person is good looking. But if you don't like me, there's no lust there. What's the lust? The lust is if I'm lusting after you, I'm projecting the fact that you could like me. I'm projecting the hypothetical situation that you like me onto you. So imagine telling 80% of the men that they're in a relationship with someone who finds them unattractive. Imagine that. That is fucking terrifying what you're doing to our society. You're repeating this message, and then you're also telling men that being a man is terrible, and you're wondering why men are getting upset and why you're having this backlash to feminism? In these fairy tales, depending on which version you read, the beautiful woman first accepts or even loves the hideous man. The sincere, lovable woman transforms the unattractive man into something better, more handsome, richer, and royal. So what they're taking away in this worldview from these fucking stories, what they're taking away is women redeem men. Women redeem men. Oh, don't worry. 80% of you are unattractive and your spouse, your partner finds you unattractive. Your girlfriend finds you unattractive. But her mere love makes you attractive. You are redeemed as a human being because she loves you. Jesus fucking Christ. I wasn't even this mad when I fucking read this the first time, but this is actually super fucking enraging. Allegorically, these stories are trying to show men and women a way to relate one-on-one, even though most women find most men unattractive. They are trying to show that sincerely offered love and love based on something other than sexual attraction can transmute ugliness to beauty and make even a relationship with unmatching attractiveness levels successful. What the fuck? So we all have a scale where 1 to 10, and if a girl's a fucking 8 and you're a 5, well, you get raised up to like a 6.5 because she loves you. And that's how you can transmute ugliness. Transmute ugliness. I'm going to use that all the time. Well, I really hope that woman can transmute my ugliness. I really hope she can take pity upon me and transmute my ugliness. How as a male can you receive this messaging and not get angry? If you actually have testosterone, if you go to the gym more than once a week, right? If you go to the gym twice a week and you get your pump on and you get testosterone in your body and you eat meat, how can you not get angry at being told you need a woman to transmute your ugliness? So one more time, they're trying to show that sincerely offered love and love based on something other than sexual attraction. By the way, I just want to be clear. The men feel attraction towards the women, right? Because what did it say up here? Let me go back to the statistics up here. I'm scrolling up. Are competing for the bottom. Yeah, the bottom 80% of men are competing for the bottom 22% of women, and the top 78% of women are competing for the top 20% of men. So what they're basically saying is 58% of that 78% are going to end up with that 80% of men. They are going to end up with 50% of that, or 58% of that 80% of men. That's what they're saying, right? That's what the numbers are saying. That's my quick math, and my math is terrible. So that means they're saying 58% of women are in relationships where they think their partner is lesser than, and they're not attracted to their partner, but the men are attracted to them. So that's what they're saying subversively here. That's what they're saying. The suppressed premise here is that the women are attractive, but it's the men that are unattractive. Remember that. The men find the women unattractive. So when we're saying Love based on something other than sexual attraction can transmute ugliness to beauty and make even a relationship with unmatching attractiveness levels successful. Think about that for a second. Think about that. The idea that women have to transmute men's ugliness. Think about that. And think about that. What? Think about not only what that does to men, but what that does to women. And think about why there's so many divorces, right? Think about why there are so many dysfunctional relationships. This article claims there are so many divorces because we're, humans are naturally competing or participating in polygyny. I think it was P-O-L-Y-G-N-Y. I believe that was the word they're using. But the idea that people don't want to be monogamous, that, you know, that's only created because of Marxism, right? Monogamy is Marxism on the sexual market. That's what they're arguing, basically. You know, it's not that there's a valid... It's what I was saying about the fucking football teams earlier. It's not that it's more enjoyable to follow a team throughout your entire life and receive the payoff and understand delayed gratification and really earning that victory. It's about giving the ugly men partners as well. What? Let me ask you something. What value is there for the 20% of men to agree to monogamy then? And that's true. And the 20% of men are Arnold Schwarzenegger and Bruce Willis, right? And Ryan Gosling and Brad Pitt, right? And Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Let's use Dwayne The Rock Johnson, okay? Our future president, Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Why would he agree to the 20%? Why would he agree to monogamy if he's in the 20%? He's smart. He's likable. He's good looking. He's fucking jacked. Who would be able to stop him? Who? Why would he agree to the 20%, to the monogamy? He wouldn't. He would just have his harem, right? So maybe there's something else that caused us to evolve as a species. And the something else is what people are missing here. It's what the article is missing, what these quotes are missing. I generally agree. This is what I'm talking about with the implications of women. This is a mind-body dichotomy. And I generally agree by focusing on the materialism, it encourages women to be more materialistic. And look at this the stereotype of the economic materialism of women. But I mean that on a purely physical attractiveness level. And especially in today's society, we see this, where women have a hard time in relationships because they're only looking at the physical side of things. They're only looking at, quote unquote, the attractiveness. They're not looking at the deeper ideas, the deeper values that drive someone. Because attractiveness, and, you know, maybe this, the argument then this is a problem. This is one of these arguments that you can't argue against, because they're going to say, oh, well, you're in the 80% of guys. That's why you're saying this. This is how you have to make yourself feel better about being less attractive, and how you have to take a less attractive woman as your mate, because these are your rationalizations. I mean, if that's true, then there's no discussion to be had. I don't believe that's true. I believe humans are mind and body, and you have to find someone attractive physically and mentally, and you have to be an integrated human being. And what you're doing is you're encouraging both genders. You're encouraging men and women to only be mind or only be body. With women, this is why you're encouraging them to only be body. You know, this is one of the most feminist things you'll ever hear me say. Maybe women don't want to develop intellectually because they're being told they don't have the need to. And they're being told that's not what their value is. Maybe this is why they're told that's not what their value is. I mean, if you embrace this worldview, then it's the idea that it's just being one of the most attractive women is what matters. That's what matters. As long as you're the top of that 78% of women, that is what matters. Well, of course, they're going to be purely physical at that point. That's how they survive. That's how they get ahead. And it's the same thing with men. If men are in that bottom 80%, are they going to take care of their bodies? Is it going to matter? I mean, I guess if you're at the top of that bottom 80% and you can pretend you're in the top 20% and, like, you know, it's like the English Premier League, where sometimes you get relegated to the 80, sometimes you get up to the 20%. That's probably the worst, right? You go through 1 year where you're like competing with Manchester United, and you're playing Manchester City and Chelsea and Arsenal and Liverpool, and then the next year you're like, you know, you're down there with Miss Piggy in the relegated league, right? You're playing Ipswich, you're playing Swansea Town or whatever. That's got to be the worst. Like, if you're in that little middle ground between the 80% and the 20% where you get relegated 1 year. But the guys below that, are they going to take care of their bodies? Are they going to go to the gym? Are they going to look at themselves as a holistic being? No, because all you're giving this messaging that everyone's half of a person. And yeah, I mean, I get the whole metaphor of your better half, but the better half is what you're provided is what you don't have, not what you do have. And then isn't it even more ironic when we think about school and that men are supposed to be the more physical ones and we're taught that men are about math, they're about numbers, they're about engineering, they're about athletics, and women are about English and art and spirituality. At least those are the stereotypes I was taught when I was a kid. So we've got this whole mishmash of a culture, and it's basically telling us we're all fucking valueless in a certain way, which kills our self-esteem, and it's all encouraging us not to be integrated as a human being. You have to look at yourself as an integrated person, take care of your mind and body, and then find somebody else who complements and reflects that mind and body. And that's what's so disturbing to me about these myths that continue. And then we wonder where incels come from. We wonder where MRA comes from. We wonder where the red pill documentary comes from. We wonder where the pickup artists come from. I mean, if you're essentially telling men they're valueless, of course a community is going to rise up and tell 80% of men that they have value and this is where you have the value. It's got nothing to do with that. The other thing is, it's individualism. Everyone has their own individual standards if you are looking at yourself as an integrated person. You're picking based upon your integrated values, what you think is important. So you're going to have different physical standards than other people. I know every guy isn't into Asians the way I am. That sounds super racist and collectivist and yellow fever, but I'm saying it to be over the top, right? We all have our preferences. We all have our values. You know, I could never date a Peyton Manning fan. I could never date a New York Jets fan. Somehow I'm dating a Los Angeles Lakers fan. I'm sorry. Sorry. Don't kill me. Don't kill me. But that's what it ultimately comes down to. It comes down to a balance of mind and body and individualism. And I just wanted to share that with you because apparently it made me angrier than I realized. And I'm really glad that I talked through this. And it's a little behind the curtain as to why I started a podcast. And if you've ever known me, why I'm a talker. I like to talk things through with people because that's how I figure things out. I talk them through. It's not always about like what I'm immediately saying. I'm just trying to figure stuff out. To me, life is an ongoing conversation, most notably with yourself. But if you surround yourself with good people, people who are morally good, people who are good at different things that you value, you can only learn from them. And you can only have good conversations with them if that is what you seek out. And I guess that's what I have learned today, right? That gives a nice little bow on this episode. So I hope the midside in general can be that value to you. Hopefully it's a conversation you have with yourself and with me. And you can engage with us on the social medias, basically on the social medias, Reach out to us on there, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. You can support us on Patreon if you want. And other people you have conversations with that you would want to be engaged in our conversation, let them know about the show. TheMidSide.com/podcast, iTunes, Spotify, wherever podcasts are streaming. You can find a whole lot of content on there. I hope you guys appreciated this episode. Last year, I did an episode like this, and I didn't charge for it on Patreon, but a bunch of people told me, not as many who talked about the backup, but a bunch of people told me, if you had charged for that, I would have been okay. I would have been okay paying you for that. So it's your fault. If you fucking hated this episode, go tell them, because they're the ones who encouraged me to do something like this again. But you know what? I have more anxiety coming into these episodes that I do alone than I do with episodes I do with other people. But I actually enjoyed this one. This was pretty good. I feel good about this one, not only because I think the quality of it is good, but because I learned something and I feel like I am a better person for having made this episode. So thanks for stopping by. This concludes your journey into the midside. I'm Justin Emelsneski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce. Have a day. I think I forgot to plug Patreon, so if you're still listening out there for the little hidden things at the end of the episode, patreon.com/themidside, themidside.com/patreon. Although I kind of did it in like a sly way where I was talking about the Patreon supporters, but there it is. If you want to, you know, give a couple bucks an episode, give a buck an episode, I'd really appreciate that. I promise you I'm not taking any money out of Patreon until I move out of California, so these fucking people do not get the excessive taxes on it.